Hello, this is Taylor Smurl.
And I'm Liz June.
And this is
Neat. It's a history lesson with a twist.
You really enjoy saying that.
I like saying it. It's a really bad pun, but I like it a lot, and I'm going to say it every time.
I like that. I like that you like saying it, and I just like it. I think it's good.
Thanks, Taylor.
No problem.
Okay.
All right. So, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about rum.
Yeah.
Where's the rum gone?
Oh, there it is. There it is. It's gone into making this podcast.
Here it is.
So, specifically, because I'm sure we'll come back to rum on an episode.
We're talking about rum on boats, specifically.
High seas rum consumption. Rumsumption. Nope.
Rumsumption.
Nope. I don't know if that's good.
I like it.
Going with it. All right, doubling down.
We're all about the bad puns here.
High seas rumsumption.
Ha! That's good.
Yeah. All right. So specifically, I want to talk about it's just the British Navy's like enduring romance with a lot of alcohol on the high seas.
Yeah, you need it.
Yeah, like
to get through. I mean, I've known a lot of people who worked on cruise ships, and you know, that's kind of the main thing they do.
I guess there's not much else to do. But it seems like a cruise ship, like, I don't know, maybe you're, like running, like, a karaoke booth for, like, some old people. Like, these people had, like, heavy artillery, and, like, they were defending their country, and they were just, well, kind of wasted the whole time. Yeah, so, really, any time you talk about, like, any sort of, like, branch of the military... And America, it's true, definitely, for all British officers. Like, there's a lot of drinking going on in, like, the 17, 18, 1900s whilst serving. That'll come up many times in the future, and it's all kind of weird to me to think of people, like, wandering around out in, like, the field in, like, World War I or on these, like, military vessels.
Well, that kind of makes sense to me because it's, like... Alcohol is the go-to coping mechanism for people.
True.
So it's like, if you're in wars and you're seeing some shit, then you gotta self-medicate a little bit.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong.
I mean, I guess you don't have to. Maybe. But actually, you do have to. I think you do.
I mean, it might not make you the most... Some of this stuff's really crazy. Yeah. It might affect your ability to, like, do your job. But yes. Yeah. So anyway, so the British Navy has pretty much since its formation offered a ration of some sort of liquor to its sailors and officers. There's some practicality here. Water on the high seas would usually spoil. Alcohol has preservative measures to it. So, I mean, obviously, like, does it hydrate you? But the thought was, well, this is something we can bring on the seas. It won't go bad. And it keeps the sailors hydrated.
There's water in it.
There is water in it. What we started out with was the ration was beer. It was about a gallon a day of beer.
Cute.
Yeah. They would get it all. They would get it all at once too, like at the start. So most of the sailors would just drink it all at once. And they got it around like 11 or 12 in the morning. Like between 11 a.m. and noon.
Someone on the planning committee messed this one up.
When I was researching, I thought for sure, like, oh well, they must have gotten their ration at the end of the day. That makes sense. Like, job well done. Take your booze and, like, retire.
Nope, you gotta keep hydrated throughout the day. So take your gallon of beer and just, you know, you'll use it in moderation. Yeah. We trust you.
This is incidentally, we'll talk about beer on a different episode, but this is where you start to see the origin of, like, hoppier, stronger beers, because, like, for long voyages, even beer would go bad after a certain
set. Yeah, is that what? That's why IPA, right? We'll talk about it.
Yeah, Imperial Pale Ale, India Pale Ale, Double IPA. These terms come from the association with the British Navy as well. But yeah, so up until the Napoleonic Wars, you have the drink of choice being beer. But as the British Navy continues to expand, they are coming in contact with other spirits. So like there was a period of time where it was like French brandy. They had wine for a while. They had arak, which is like a strong, it's an Indian spirit. And it kind of like as rum, the creation of rum and the political influence of rum kind of grows in power, rum sort of settles in and gets the contract for the British Navy.
Because they were also in the Caribbean a lot.
Yeah.
And that was what they made there.
Yep.
A lot of it.
So yeah, so it's not a gallon anymore, which is probably good because now we're dealing with spirits. It's just a little, just a pint. That's a lot. I mean,
I guess that's all I need. Is it a lot or a little?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. And you know, once again, at first they're getting a pint of overproof rum at 11 a.m. This time, the time where they would distribute the booze was called Up Spirits. That's what they would all announce. Up Spirits.
To get your spirits up.
You didn't have to drink. You could refuse it, and then you were reimbursed like 3 pence a day.
Oh.
Not a lot of people did that.
Right, because what else are you going to drink?
Yeah, and I don't think you could... I don't know the cost of a pint of rum at that time, but I can't imagine you... It seems like a good deal to take the rum and not the 3 pence. I don't know.
But also, they don't really... I don't think water is... They don't really seem to have another option, too.
That's true. Like, you could drink your money. You can't do that.
You can't drink money.
I do it all the time.
I mean, I guess you can.
I drink my money.
Figuratively, yes, you can drink your money.
but you know, it is kind of like they were pretty aware early on. Like there are lots of officers' journals, like, "Hey, these sailors are drunk like all the time. We need to do things about this.
We're not getting shit done."
No, and the solutions they give are not like the best off the bat. Like one of the first things that happens is they don't cut the ration in half. They just decide, well, twice a day. So now you get half a pint of rum twice a day.
Okay.
So instead of just getting smashed in the morning and I guess maybe sobering up with a hangover around like nightfall, you're just going
to
stay
3
nice.
3 o'clock.
Yeah.
To be honest, all right, though.
Okay. But you're going to stay a nice steady drunk all day. I think that's okay. Just a nice.
Great. A nice, mellow. Tips, you know.
And the glass, you probably heard like a tot of gin or a tot of rum. It refers to the glass they would serve it in. Like
had glasses on the boat?
It's not like a glass. It was like a little, like a tin.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
This is what it was called.
Dangerous. They're just really asking for it.
Well, and they also...
They're getting their soldiers drunk.
They're giving them glasses.
Giving them sharp objects.
They had, like,
they
cannons.
Didn't give them weapons.
I was going to say, I'm not worried about the glasses. I'm worried about the cannons.
I'm worried about the glasses.
I know. And they wouldn't... They actually would only wash the outsides. They wouldn't wash the insides because they wanted... They thought that the proof of the spirit would kind of build up on it and it would get boozier.
Wow. They're even still trying to get more drunk.
But here's the thing. About the rum they were drinking, it's overproof. You've probably heard the phrase...
Pretend I don't know what that means.
Well, overproof means it's higher than standard proof. Like, usually, like, we're dealing with, like, like 40% alcohol is, like, a standard spirit. Anything over that is considered overproof. At the time, we didn't have the Sykes hydrometer, which is how you, like, the first invention that measured alcohol content. That didn't come along to like, 1817. So before that, we really didn't have a way of knowing how much alcohol was in a distillate. We just did the same process and hoped it worked out. And a lot of like shady booze makers would water stuff down.
Mm.
So obviously the Navy was concerned with getting a good product for their sailors to get wasted on. So this is where we get kind of the birth of, like, it's referred to now as Navy Strength. That was a kind of a marketing ploy developed, like, pretty recently. But it was still, like, the test for strength was designed by the British Navy. Mm. What they'd do is they'd mix a little bit of the spirit with gunpowder, and then they'd light it on fire. And if it, like...
If it blew up.
Yeah. Then it was... they knew it was at least 57% alcohol.
Okay.
So that's a big jump. Like, when your standard shelf bottles right now are around 40. Like, you might find something in the 45. There's definitely overproof spirits available, but this was standard 57% or higher.
Dang.
So they were drinking strong booze. Yeah, and even after the Sykes hydrometer was invented, they still continued to buy their booze at 57% because then it was tradition. Just tradition to buy this incredibly high proof spirit.
Yeah. We want the Navy Strength. Yeah. Anything else is shit.
Yeah. The main company that provided it was a company called ED&F Manning Co. It was a British company, obviously. I was curious what this rum was, because, like, rum at this time was all sorts of stuff. Like, there was some real gnarly rum out there. Mm. Like, this was like legitimate rum. It was probably something close to like a Jamaican pot stilled rum with, like, lighter rums blended in. There's a rum out there now called Pusser's Rum that claims to be using...
What's it called?
Pusser's Rum. Pusser's. I don't like the name. It makes me uncomfortable to say. You knew that and you made me say it again.
I just wanted to know if I was hearing you correctly. Yeah. I mean, we're covered because this podcast is explicit content.
It's true. We learned that we had to label ourselves. We have to. But yeah, so you've got Pusser's Rum out there that says they're the traditional Navy recipe. And they have the whole story about, like, no, the original rum was made in a wood pot and that's what makes it different. Well, liquor companies they like to tell stories, but, you know, it's supposed to be close to what the sailors were probably drinking. Around 1740, it was a really cool admiral that does a lot for drinking in the Navy.
Okay.
His name is Edward Vernon, and he wore a grogram cloak, which is just a type of fabric.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And so he was nicknamed Old Grog because of this. And he was the one who first suggested, like, hey, our sailors are drunk all the time. How about we dilute the ration with water so they maybe are getting a little less wasted?
They call him Old Grog.
Old Grog.
Old Greg,
yes. Very close. Very close.
I'm Old Grog.
But understand, he's not like, let's water it down and give them less alcohol. No. Still, you get a half pint twice a day. It's just going to be cut with some water. So, you know. And then he also suggested to add some lime and some sugar to it.
Ah, so you don't get scurvy.
Well, and this is something that when the Navy started sort of expeditions into India, they discovered something called, it's like called pun, but it sort of anglicized to punch. And that it was a mix.
They couldn't say it right.
No. Like, the actual word translates to five, and it had five ingredients. It had, like, sweet tea, spice notes, booze, water. It had your traditional, like,
some fruits?
Fruits, yeah. It had your traditional punch ingredients that we now think of as we make punch, but it was traditionally something that was more embraced by the officers. And the officers weren't getting scurvy, but all of these sailors that were just drinking neat pints of booze were getting sick. So, you know, they figured out at this time that there was a relationship between no scurvy and having the citrus. So what Vernon basically proposed was a cheaper sailor level version of punch.
They just put some lime in there.
Lime, a little sugar. Really, and I've argued in past episodes that America is, like, no, the birthplace of the cocktail, but this is definitely, like, a standalone. He made a cocktail. Like, he also designed a cocktail for the boys.
For the boys.
Yeah. So this became known as grog, named after him. You'll still see, like, Navy grog on menus now. I mean, it's a pretty loose recipe, but It's kind of the same idea. Some combination of rum, lime, sugar, and water. Incidentally, Vernon is also sometimes credited for inventing the gin and tonic.
Oh, yeah. He's very busy.
Yeah, well, but for similar reasons, tonic contained really high levels of quinine. It still does, but it had higher levels of quinine at the time, and it was made as a tonic to fight malaria, because quinine helps with malaria. So he encouraged the drinking of gin and tonics by servicemen because it would help fight off malaria.
So smart. Yeah. He's so tricksy.
He did a lot of... He did nothing to stop the drinking. He made it probably all taste better and more, like, helpful in other ways.
Yeah, like, you're not going to stop drinking, so I'm just going to put your medicine in your drink.
Yep. It really...
Make sure you don't get scurvy there. I'm old, Greg.
Was that?
Don't get scurvy now.
There we go.
I'm old, Greg.
You're being visited by the ghost of old Greg. Being channeled through Liz. Would you like some water in your rum?
Take a little lime in there.
Oh, no.
A little sugar.
So, like, rum is kind of treated as a currency among sailors.
Ooh.
Like, they would use it to barter. They would save it up to, like, repay debts. One of the terms that I came across in this was sandy bottoms.
Sandy bottoms? That sounds like something from SpongeBob.
It does. What is Sandy the Squirrel's name?
I think she's just Sandy the Squirrel, but it's Bikini Bottom. Is where they live.
That's right. It's been a while. I'm a little embarrassed
You're not watching SpongeBob on the reg?
Not right now. Not in the past few weeks, at least. Anyway.
Shame on you.
So, the term Sandy Bottoms was when, I guess, to repay a debt or you lose a bet or something, somebody gets to drink your entire ration of rum.
Ah.
So
who has the Sandy Bottom?
Well, I think that's just, it's like, oh, Sandy Bottoms, you gotta give me your rum. I bet that's what they said.
Oh, like, tough titties.
Yes, Sandy Bottoms.
Sandy Bottoms.
Give me your rum. I'm gonna try that at the bar, see if it works.
You know, wait, is it just a game? You're just like...
No, it's not a game.
Sandy Bottoms, gotcha.
It's called when you're like, you gotta...
Oh, you just, like, you owe me money.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Sandy Bottoms. Mm-hmm.
There's another term that comes from the sort of this all the drinking period of the British Navy, which is splice the main brace.
Is that a game?
No, it actually. So the main brace on a ship, it's kind of the big center point where if it withstands damage during like a naval battle, the ship kind of is stuck in place. So it's an incredibly important thing to fix.
Ah.
So they usually would have to fix it like mid battle. And so anybody that would help that, like, would help fix the main brace in the middle of a battle, because it was harrowing and dangerous, they would usually get it, they'd be rewarded with an extra ration. But over time, this just became a term for, like, let's have a drink, let's splice the main brace.
Oh, that's cute.
Like, also a term that I want to break out, just to see, like, are there any old... archaic British sailors in this bar?
Not in your bar.
No, not in my bar.
Maybe in the bar down the street.
Splice the main brace. Full effect. You should all use it with your buddies when you're trying to say, let's go get a drink, and then make it cool again.
Make it cool. That's your assignment, listeners.
And I guess they still use it, like in naval ceremonies. It's still a common phrase you hear for, like, now let's all drink.
Oh, that's cute.
So it's super cute. But unfortunately, well, maybe not unfortunately, probably super fortunately, as we move towards modern times, we're inevitably high-tech weaponry is becoming involved. The rations start to kind of get cut away at. They're reduced by half in 1823, and then again by half in 1850. So, you know, half a pint down to a quarter pint twice, or an eighth of a pint twice a day, I guess. But also, like, towards, like, the early 1900s, towards, like, the 50s, the interest in the ration kind of dies down. Like, one out of three sailors was actually taking them up on it. So it wasn't quite as popular as it used to be.
Okay.
And then the thing that kind of set off the modern drive to, like, get rid of it entirely is, like, a newspaper ran an article where they ran a breathalyzer on an active sailor, and he was legally drunk while serving.
Gotcha.
And that kind of started the conversation in Parliament, like, hey, maybe we got to get rid of this. So they outlawed the rum ration officially, they moved a bunch of money around. Like, they donated all this money so that sailors could have other forms of entertainment, like discos, I guess.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
I'll take a disco for my rum. You can still get rum at the disco.
But it's, like, on board. Like, that's the way I was, like, is it, like, they built, like, where they having dance parties on the ships instead of... So we're going to take your booze and we're going to give you a sober dance party with a bunch of...
You can't be drunk anymore, but dance for me. Dance.
I don't know if I like that. I need my rum ration if I'm going to dance.
Yeah, I mean, well, here's the thing. You probably still, let's be honest, you probably still have some kind of bar somewhere on the ship. Maybe.
Well, they were allowed to purchase...
Yeah, you could buy stuff still.
There was like a limited amount of beer they could have. Like, I think it was 3 half pints they could purchase.
But then, like, yeah, you buy that when you're done with your shift.
Yeah.
Like a regular... No, I don't know.
I'm sure that people will
probably...
Plenty of
people can still be drunk at work. I mean, not doctors, but...
But you don't get any more for free now. It's not part of your wages. Right. So July 31st...
That makes sense. Yeah. Money should be your wage.
Yeah, I don't want to, I mean, I...
And then you can buy booze if you want to.
Yeah, you just couldn't be, like, drunk in service anymore. That was decidedly bad. It took, like, 250 years...
Wow.
...for them to realize that maybe the people that are protecting our country, manning highly complex, like, dangerous, massive ships... And they shouldn't be wasted, you know? I mean,
maybe not.
Parliament.
Yeah.
I think that it took them a while to figure that out. I do like the redistribution. They're like, add water to it, but keep it the same. Give it twice a day, but keep it the same. Like, they tried to make it work. They tried to let those sailors stay wasted.
They tried. You know what? They tried, but no. Sandy bottoms.
Sandy bottoms. So on July 31st, 1970, it's a day referred to as Black Tot Day.
Oh, my.
Yeah, the British Navy served one final tot, and...
That term came back.
Yep. And, like, the sailors were... Despite the fact that the interest had kind of waned, the sailors were pretty upset about this. They threw mock funerals. They were, like, they wore black armbands. Like, a lot of them were so upset that they just threw their last ration into the sea.
Don't do that.
Yeah, and that was it. That was the sobering up of the British Navy.
Wow. You know what? I'm about to splice the main...
Are you going to splice the main brace?
The main brace. I was about to say the mainframe.
Splice the mainframe.
Because I'm a hacker.
I was going to say, that's definitely a 1990s fake hacker term. Splice the mainframe! can we write that, like, sci-fi, like, futuristic, but set in, like steampunk British Navy... hacker crossover, and then that just around that term, we just invented a genre.
Oh, we did.
This would be great.
We got to make a movie.
Yeah.
You can fund it.
Great. Oh, you know, I thought you were talking to me. I'm like, why
not
me?
Not you.
I can only afford one microphone. I'm not gonna fund a movie.
I'm gonna get you another microphone.
We're gonna get there
soon. I'm gonna get it.
There is still that original company, ED&F Man & Co. that made the British rum. Is apparently there's still. Like, they bottled some of their rum, and it's kind of out there limited, and it's called Black Tot Rum. So
I don't want to drink that.
It doesn't
sound good.
It's a weird, yeah, but apparently it's floating around somewhere out there. But yeah, I guess curious history of the drunken British Navy.
Well, guess what?
What?
You mentioned that the Navy didn't really like this. They're protesting with their black armbands in 1970. But let's go way back. Let's go back to the beginning. Because, turns out, if you didn't like what they're doing with the British Navy, you had options. You had options, especially if you had sailing experience. And, like, they're kind of right to be like, yeah, give me my frickin' rum. Because I'm living a high-risk lifestyle serving in your Navy right now.
So I better be wasted.
Right?
I want those risks sky high.
But if you liked doing that shit, then, you know, firing cannons and living on the high seas, you could definitely take your skills elsewhere, because you could, there were opportunities to work as privateers for the government. They're like kind of independent contractors. So they were basically, they're working on a government contract, and their job was to attack enemy ships, but they needed a license, basically. So that's what privateers were. But if you did that and you didn't have a license, then guess what you are?
An unlicensed privateer?
You're a pirate.
Oh, that's a much cooler name.
You probably saw it coming, folks. You probably saw it coming, right? Because we're talking about rum.
Can't talk about rum without talking about pirates.
Yeah. So if you're a pirate, then you don't have any of those pesky Navy rules. You can drink as much booze as you want. So, actually, a lot of pirates started out as military sailors, but they switched to pirating because they found the lifestyle a lot more appealing. They don't have anybody to answer to. They make a lot more money because they're gonna just, they do whatever they want. They just, like, if they see somebody, some ships that have some booty, they're gonna fight them and take their stuff. Yeah, they even actually would attack other ships and take their rum. Too. That was like a big thing.
Like, leave everything else, just take the rum.
Yeah, I mean, well, they probably took the other stuff too, but yeah. Like, but the rum was probably because that was when the Caribbean is actually exporting a lot of rum, so it's one of the most valuable things they have available to steal, and they like it. They like it a lot. In fact, they like it so much that there was a really blatant disregard for sobriety on pirate ships, so much that it seemed that they were very easily overtaken if somebody challenged them, because most of the time they were fucking drunk.
That's a really, like, you think of pirates like, oh no, dangerous, scary, intimidating, cool, like, nah, just a bunch of, like, weebly drunks.
They're all drunk, especially, they're, okay, so there's a really funny story, about this this captain, William Snellgrave, which is a great name.
Oh, that's sad.
His ship was taken by pirates off the coast of New Guinea just regular Guinea. Captain William Snellgrave's ship was taken by pirates off the coast of Guinea in West Africa, and so he was their prisoner, but the conditions were pretty loose. They even invited him to eat and drink with the captain and his mates and have some rum punch with them, but one night, the ship caught on fire. The ship caught on fire, and all of the pirates, the crew that were on board, couldn't organize to take any kind of action because they were too drunk. So it ended up that Snellgrave and the other prisoners aboard the ship were the ones who took care of it.
Did they just go back to being prisoners after they put out the fire? Or were they like, hey, we put out your fire, so you should let us go now?
I mean, I don't know, actually. I don't know. I didn't find the end of that story. But
I hope they let him go.
I think they probably, I mean, they treated him pretty well. They were like, yeah, you can have some rum punch and, like, here's some food. And, like, we're just kind of, you just got to chill with us. We just want you to be our friend.
I feel like after that, they're just like, hey, so if you're not doing anything, how about you be our captain now? Because you just saved our butts.
Yeah,
and
man.
And are more sober than us.
Yep. Yep. Well, I'd like to, if I can, now I'd like to ruin one of your favorite pirates. I don't know if it's your personal favorite pirate.
I don't. Do I have a personal favorite pirate?
Who's your favorite pirate? Tell me right now.
I don't know. I mean.
Okay.
I need to think of a good. Who's a good ass pirate? The Dread Pirate Roberts.
Okay, good.
Are you gonna ruin the Dread Pirate Roberts?
No, I'm not gonna ruin the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Okay.
but I am going to ruin one of the more famous problematic fave pirates that maybe you know something about, or maybe you don't, people out there. I'm talking about Captain Morgan.
Now, see, because I was going to say, Captain Morgan's rum, like, look, I don't like to, like, harsh on anybody's spirit of choice.
I'm sorry. Actually, they might want to sponsor us someday. We don't know.
Right. Just in case you're listening, Mr. Captain Morgan. Is that how you address him? Mr. Captain Morgan.
His first name is Henry, so I guess you can...
Hey, Henry. There are better spiced rums out there in the same price range. Captain Morgan's has a ton of additives and, like, artificial stuff in it. It'll just make your hangover 10 times worse. Drink a different spiced rum.
Okay, I'm glad that we've taken a strong stance on Captain Morgan, and you have a more informed stance, because I just don't like the guy.
Okay, well, tell us why.
He's an asshole, that's why. Okay.
All right.
Okay, so, Captain Morgan, who the fuck is this guy?
Captain Morgan, who the fuck is this guy?
So he was, there's, like, not a lot known about his early life. He was born, around 1635 in Wales, maybe? And attempts to identify his parents have all been... this is a quotation. Attempts to identify his parents and descendants have all proved unsatisfactory. So, like, no one knows where he came from. They're not really sure how... Like, nobody's really sure how he got to the Caribbean. He may have traveled as part of the army... He may have been an apprentice of a maker of cutlery, or he may have been abducted in Bristol. You know, I guess if he was abducted, I'm sorry for that trauma in your life. It's no excuse for the bad behavior you have later in life. But yeah, so he was a privateer. And basically, I explained a little bit earlier, a privateer is basically a pirate with a license. So this is this is like state sanctioned piracy.
I mean, were they like mercenaries sort of deal? Like, yeah, they would work for the
right, well,
Navy,
like,
but they didn't have to follow the rules.
Right. So there was a guy who was appointed the governor of Jamaica, some dude, Sir Thomas Modiford. So he's the governor, and first he made he was charged to limit the activities of the privateers, and so he made a proclamation against their activities, but economically, that wasn't so good for them, so they actually revoked that, because pirateering was really, really good for the British government, who was colonizing Jamaica at the time, because privateers were obligated to split the spoils of their escapades with the sovereign or the issuing ambassador. So Captain Morgan did some piracy, basically. He did some privateering, and Modiford was impressed with the spoils, and he reported back to the British government that Central America was the properest place for an attack on the Spanish Indies, just because of its valuables, I guess. Basically, what happened then was there were rumors of a Spanish invasion in Jamaica, so privateers were authorized to take action against the Spanish. So they're basically acting as, like, an extension of the Navy, but they don't have Navy rules, they're kind of flexible, they're not, like, answering back to any commanders. So they would get a letter of marque, and Morgan got one of these letters to draw together the English privateers and take prisoners of the Spanish nation. And they actually gave him, because Modiford was so impressed, he gave him the rank of admiral. So, Morgan's letter gave him permission. Any privateer had permission to attack at sea, but not on land. And any plunder obtained from the attack, they would split with the government and the owners of the ships rented to the privateers. So they had to, even like the privateers couldn't actually take half, they got like a percentage, but they weren't taking half of the plunders. Half of the plunders went to the owners of the ship, and then half of it went to the government.
But if the privateers stepped outside their official remit and raided a city, any plunder would actually be retained by the privateers. The thing about that is it's illegal.
I was going to say, how is that not just piracy?
Yeah, no, it is piracy. Attacks on cities were illegal piracy, but they were extremely profitable, so they did it anyway. Basically.
Is this one of those things where the government just kind of turned a blind eye to
Yeah, it absolutely is. Cool. It is. I mean, the government was doing seedy shit, too. I mean, colonialism, they did that. They were cool with that. So they were pretty cool with all this other shit that he did, fair. Too.
Yeah, I guess everyone was kind of shitty at this time.
Yeah, just like general fuckery all around. So Morgan was like, hey, if I can provide evidence of a potential Spanish attack, then I can justify a raid on a city. So, for instance, he was originally going to attack Havana, but it was heavily armed and protected. He saw that. So he was like, no, I'm going to attack Puerto Principe instead because it's not as well guarded. But apparently he was... Then after all that, he was disappointed in the lack of booty that he got booty. From there. Booty. So, yeah, like, he was just a big dick. I don't like him.
Was he just a bully? So he's just like...
He's just, like, going around the Caribbean to all these Spanish settlements. So he attacks Portobello. And this is just an example of the shitty shit that he did. He ordered that these big ladders be built... And then he commanded all of the religious men and women that he had taken prisoner previously to fix them against the walls, like hold them against the walls. And that is at the head of the company. So they're like right in the middle of combat. And a bunch of them were killed. And
wow.
Yeah. So there's this guy, Alexander Exquilmelin, and he wrote about all of this shit that Morgan did. And guess what Morgan did?
Owned up to it, said I'm sorry, and retired from piracy for life.
Nope, he sued him for libel.
Second guess. That's like, pirates, high seas, like plundering. Libel?
Yeah, no, he's like, you're ruining my good name. I'm an honest man. They did. They had libel.
Wow.
And because he was contracted by the British government, like, he's kind of got, and he's making kind of a name for himself, like, he's being seen as a hero in some eyes. Mm. So let me tell you about the next shitty thing he did. He wrote to Don Augustin, who is the current president, not the current today, but at the time.
He's old.
He's ancient. He was
the president of Panama is apparently a vampire.
Okay, so he was the president of Panama, and Morgan wrote him a letter to demand a ransom of 350,000 pesos for the city. He refused. And so, according to Exquemelin, who painted a picture of widespread rape and debauchery, like, Morgan just, like, came in and raided and completely stripped the city of its wealth. Don Augustin tried to, stop this raid by force with an army of 800 men, but they repelled them. It didn't work, so they settled for a ransom of 100,000 pesos, and then Morgan returned to Port Royal with between 70,000 and 100,000 pounds of valuables plus the 100,000 pesos that he negotiated in that scam.
Okay, so he just went around like just violating.
Yeah, people. No, he was terrible. But he was widely viewed as a national hero and never rebuked for his actions. There was a time when we thought if we were like watching this movie, we were like, oh yeah, Morgan's gonna get it. He's gonna get it. So Morgan was planning to attack one of these Spanish settlements. It happened to be the richest and probably the most important Spanish settlement at the time. And so he had this war council in Oxford, and he called all his captains in, and a spark on the ship's powder magazine actually ignited and destroyed the ship and over 200 of its crew. And this is the crazy thing. So they're all sitting at a table.
there's four captains on one side of the table that were killed by the blast. Morgan and the captain seated on the other side of the table survived.
Well, great.
Yeah. Now his fleet is a little bit too small to attack the settlement that he'd planned on attacking. Doesn't stop him from continuing his state-sanctioned fuckery. He's generally just being an asshole. He's going around and doing his thing. But then Spain and England sign a treaty, and Morgan doesn't know about it. So he attacks Panama, and yeah, that's kind of awkward because they just signed a treaty.
Wow.
So Spain...
Did he not get the memo?
No, he didn't. The
carrier?
No, snail mail back then, you know?
Yeah.
So Spain is pretty mad about it, and they consider war. They're pretty miffed.
Spain is mad.
They're mad. So to appease the Spanish... Charles II has Morgan arrested and returned to London. And that's where maybe he was imprisoned for a short time in the Tower of London, but there's no record of that. Mostly he was at liberty while he was there. They just ordered him to stop being a pirate, basically. Like, they were just like, hey, stop that piracy, you old scallywag. And he was never charged with anything. And they even asked him for advice on how to govern Jamaica. And later they made him a deputy to the governor. So while he's in this position, he still wanted to keep benefiting from privateering. So although he wasn't allowed to write letters of marque to privateer captains, his brother-in-law directed them to the French governor of Tortuga to have them issued, and they received a commission for each one signed. So he's still doing his shit. So the two former governors who were back in London at the time were then like over there talking shit about him. And actually Lynch ended up paying Charles II £50,000 to have Morgan's commissions as governor revoked. So Lynch becomes governor again, but Morgan's still on the Assembly of Jamaica. But because he got his position revoked, he's sad. So his drinking gets worse. So they have a private physician inspect Morgan. And he was diagnosed with dropsy, which is basically like, you're a drunk.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I hate this story so much because it's like his whole life, he's a terrible person and gets away with it. And he dies eventually. So he died in 1688. In 1692, an earthquake struck Port Royal. About two-thirds of the town, amounting to 33 acres, sank into Kingston Harbor immediately after the main shock. And guess what? The cemetery that included Morgan's grave was one of the parts of the city that fell into the sea.
Well, that's... I mean, that's a little too late.
Yeah, but his body was never located, so...
He's a ghost pirate now!
He's a ghost pirate. He belongs to the sea. His body is at unrest. His soul wanders the...
Davy Jones locker.
Yes, that's what...
That's where he is in. He's in the old locker room. That's not a locker room. Oh, that's not shit. What it is.
Excuse me. I'm burped again.
So it's an episode about pirates. It's fine. You just burp,
yeah, we
can
talk.
Curse.
Oh, yeah. You can burp and curse.
It's fine.
Burp and curse.
Burp and curse. All right. Well, this has been Neat. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I'm still Liz Dune. And we are going to have a companion video to this very, very special rum episode. There will be other rum episodes, but this one was about sailors and pirates, so we're probably going to put on some funny costumes and make some cool cocktails for you.
With rum!
Yeah, and it's going to be on YouTube. You can follow a link in our show notes. Look for our Patreon. It should be up and running pretty, pretty soon, and you can help be part of this cool thing that we're doing. Yeah, so look for that video, and thank you for listening.